Hi, podcasters. This is Brooke with Let's Talk Art. Today I'm talking art with Jen Mergel and Hannah Goodwin of the Boston Museum of Fine Arts. We're talking about their Feeling for Form exhibition, which went on earlier this year. It's actually over, but I thought it was such a cool idea that I wanted to learn more about it. I hate that I missed it. We are still in the process of lining up sponsors for Let's Talk Art with Brooke, but in the meantime, if you'd like to support the podcast, please look for my book, Reptiles on Caffeine, on Amazon. Enjoy the podcast. Great exhibition. So tell me about this, the Feeling for Form. Is it an exhibition? Is it a service or is it a program? What exactly is it?
It's a program, and I would say it's also a little bit of a service. Mm-hmm. So Feeling for Form was started many years ago, like 30, as a touch tour program for visitors who are blind or have low vision. Mm-hmm. And has expanded greatly. Mm-hmm. The idea behind it is to offer tours to any part of the collection, mm-hmm. including special exhibitions in the museum. And some of those objects can be explored by touch, but as I'm sure you can imagine, many cannot.
Right.
And are then accessed through other means. So the program that is offered to people can request a tour whenever the museum is open, mm-hmm. so 7 days a week, three mm-hmm. nights a week. And it's a visitor-centered program, so it's really tailored to the visitor. And then, so that's the program piece. And then, as part of the program, sometimes we do special events or series of tours that we put out to the community that people can sign up for or show up for. Mm-hmm. And we also have a monthly program. So once a month, there's a different theme every month. But it's steady. It's steady so people can always know that at that time, on that day, there'll be a Feeling for Form tour.
Right.
And then the people who lead those tours are volunteers who are trained to lead these tours and trained in the different skills that you need to lead a tour.
Right.
Visual world for people who are blind or have low vision. Mm-hmm. Also provide support. This is the service piece. Will provide support in other areas. So if a member, say, wants to go to a lecture that Jen was giving, mm-hmm. then we would provide that person with someone who would describe the objects. So what Jen was saying would have a context and make sense. Likewise, a school tour, a student comes in a classroom who's blind, then we give them a guide with all those tools so they can stay with their classmates. But the tour actually makes sense. So
right.
A little bit about the program. It's an all-ages program. We have very young children, mm-hmm. all the way, the whole lifespan.
And you train a number of volunteers.
I do.
How many volunteers are involved with it now?
A lot. Well, there are about 50 volunteers who work in access, and I would say about 30 who are actively involved with the Feeling for Form program.
Yeah. And I should just add, Brooke, so in my role, I'm the Beale Family Senior Curator of Contemporary Art here at the MFA.
Uh-huh.
And Hannah, what's your official title now?
I'm the Manager of Accessibility.
Cool.
The Manager of Accessibility, which is a full-time position.
Cool.
And for me, I had been aware in my 6 years at the MFA of the programs that Hannah had been overseeing and growing, but I had never been directly engaged on the level that we were through this project. And
right.
So I felt like I had an amazing opportunity to not only learn about the program and the service,
uh-huh.
but also learn about different ways to interpret art and experience art,
right.
Through the professional guidance of Hannah and her volunteer team. So one example of that, in terms of even doing basically a kind of run through or a training session with Hannah and one of her really crack guys. He's fantastic. Even learning how do you, as somebody who is sighted and often giving tours with references to things that are visual and often not touching pieces, how do you direct attention to certain areas, how you raise questions and build context for questions without visual references. And by using references that can still be quite evocative and communicative without counting on, say, the markers of color or, you know, metaphorical comparisons. This looks like X.
So, I mean, we use metaphor, but not comparing visual to
visual. And so we could talk a bit about, you know, all of the specifics or the ranges of ways, I think, of course, our guests to the program, and we ended up having four public announced tours of this piece inspired by the Surface Matters exhibition and within that Julius Caesar sculpture, and then also a number of private engagements as well. And in that experience, of course, our guests and our visitors were learning a lot, but I would just add that I feel like I was learning a lot also.
Yeah. That's awesome. So you said that...
And we did too. I just have to say it was really fun teaming up with Jen as a curator, we and Jed as an artist, something that we don't get to offer this particular group of people very often. To have that close contact and that opportunity to hear both from an artist and a curator. So it was great.
So tell me a little bit about how you recognize the need for something like this, or the thought that this might be just something really good to do.
Do you mean in particular with this exhibition, or, you know, like thinking 30 years back?
I guess 30 years back, because I mean, I guess it would be, it's kind of, it was kind of unheard for me to think of like a blind person going to an art museum. And what, I'm just trying to think of like how I would, I wouldn't have thought it was possible. And I just think that it's so cool that you thought of a way for them to do it. And I'm just kind of curious about what started that process of thinking.
Well, I mean, I wasn't here when the program started. The program started in response to a visitor request. And I know at that time there were, I would say, the very beginnings of cultural access for people who are blind or have low vision. And at the risk of sounding overly simplistic, people who are blind want to go to the museums for basically the same reasons that we do. That there's that art, I think, is art is universal, even if individual pieces are not universal. I think the desire to express oneself, the desire to see how others express themselves, the love of beauty in all its different forms, the provocative nature of art, you know, all of the potential that art has is something that resonates across ability. And while it might seem like a stretch for someone who is blind to participate in a visual institution, I think that... well, most of us who are sighted, I think, rely very heavily on our vision.
Yes.
In ways that we're not even aware of.
Exactly.
But we do also live in a multi-sensory world.
Right.
So the visual world is referred to, talked about, written about in all kinds of ways, so that even if you're blind, you still have reference
points. Still get a sense of it.
That we might not think about. Excuse me. But also... that is that ability or disability is a spectrum just like every other. So there are people who have been blind all their lives. There are people who had vision who don't anymore. There are people whose vision has changed.
people have some vision. So within that group of people, there's quite a variety too,
right?
In terms of their vision, but in terms of their brains and their hearts and their emotions, you know, I think there's much more crossover and connection than. So does that make sense?
Yes.
That kind of answer.
Yeah.
So, and I think one of the things, I get this question a lot, and I appreciate it as someone who's very visual myself, and I really think it's a shame in a way that more of us don't have time to be in visual spaces together, meaning people who are sighted and people who are blind.
Right.
Because really, I would say it takes one experience, and then it's like, oh,
yeah,
you know,
right,
there's
right.
more share here than maybe we would have thought.
Exactly.
And Brooke Ann is looking at me and I'm nodding while she's speaking because for me, and of course, primacy of the visual, I can't be overstated in terms of what I depend on for my professional work as a visual arts curator.
Right.
But in terms of the experience of not only doing a project in this case with groups, you know, ranging in size from 2 to 3 to at most about 8, trying to keep groups small, along with sometimes we had trained, you know, seeing eye dogs, or we had guests who were also with our visitors assisting them. We really experienced art in a completely different way. I should say, in this particular instance, Jedediah Caesar, Jed Caesar, is a sculptor who is creating a work of art in a high-density resin, right? And then with found materials, in this case wood, embedded in that resin.
Right.
And he was very comfortable with the idea of visitors touching his work.
His pieces,
And not, right, and was... Of course, as a living artist, he could tell us. I could ask him, and he could tell us, as opposed to, say, an antiquity, where I couldn't really talk with the creator.
Right, right.
He could tell us, not only am I comfortable with that, I'm actually very interested in that.
Yeah.
And so there are reasons that the museum wouldn't typically invite a visitor, sighted or not sighted, to touch any works in the collection. And you'll often see signs in museums around the world or around the country that have a little hand with a line through that
don't
do
touch.
Not touch because, you know, the oils of your fingers and things like that directly impact and will eventually stain or change the, you know, the chemical nature of the surface of a piece irreparably. But Jed was interested in as much the discovery of what would happen with this interaction with visitors to the point where he made very clear he was fine even with gloveless touching.
Oh, cool.
Which meant it was
cool.
It was very cool and a very, very special experience because the surface of his piece also had 3 very different textures because it was made through processes that when you touch them, you could tell, you know, the processes for creating different surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
And so our visitors, whether or not they were low vision or had no vision, they could touch one, say, side of his sculpture and understand it was so smooth because it was cut with an industrial cutter.
Uh-huh.
And then another side was ripply because it was, you know, wet resin sitting on kind of ripply sheets of plastic, and it kind of solidified in that form, like cast against the plastic. And then the third side was very rough, almost like bark or even rock, because he had built that up with sort of like the equivalent of you getting a cast at the hospital, like old, you know, like plaster
and
with burlap inside. And so for them to be able to touch and to touch without gloves meant that they really start to, in their minds, wrap their heads around what it was that was a process. And I would argue in ways that many sighted visitors who are walking by the piece would never have understood.
Yeah, totally. You're getting a whole new experience from it. One that
a completely new experience. And for Jed, he was very excited as an artist because this piece,
which is called Redwood. Mm-hmm. And he's from California, and the piece was made with wood gathered from Topanga Beach, like, you know, in California, as well as from a furniture wood shop in California. So mm-hmm. man-made and natural wood, and they were both like churned either by the ocean or by people's machines, mm-hmm. and sort of dumped together in this resin. He's very interested in the idea of creating this huge solid chunk, slicing it open, mm-hmm. and then you know what you see on the surface is just a tiny fraction, and everything else inside, you can't see it, but you know it's there.
Right.
So much of his sculpture is about what you actually, what's revealed in uh-huh. the discovery of slicing it open and opening it up, but there's so much more that's just implied and not available to our vision.
Right.
And, you know, I think that a lot of those understandings and ideas even became much more clear to him in answering some of the questions from the guests who came on the special tour.
Right, right. I think that's so cool that he was so agreeable to this. So you went to him because you had seen his sculptures and thought they'd be good for this sort of exhibition. What's your connection to him? He's in LA, you're in Boston.
Mm-hmm. So I had done an exhibition with Jedediah Caesar way back in 2011. Mm-hmm. And Jed has a connection to Boston, and that he studied here in Boston. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you're familiar with the fact that the Museum of Fine Arts Boston has had for about 140 years an affiliated school of the Museum of Fine Arts Boston.
Okay.
So this undergraduate and graduate program has, you know, supported the careers of numbers of artists, Ellsworth Kelly, Cy Twombly, Nan Golden, a number of really important artists have gone to what we call the museum school.
Mm-hmm.
So as an alum of the museum school, in researching his work to see, well, who's done what through the museum school,
right.
I learned about Jed
mm-hmm.
and did invite him to do an exhibition back in 2011. And then it was after the exhibition that we acquired the sculpture in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And then it took some time for me to find the right context and to develop an exhibition that made a lot of sense.
Right.
But the idea of surface matters, along with the other works in the show, was a great showcase for it.
Uh-huh. Cool.
That opened in 2015.
Cool.
And it was his decision to come out for the tour.
Mm-hmm.
He okayed us using the piece as a touch object, art object, in these exhibitions. And he knew we were setting a series of dates, that we were inviting people in to go on these tours. And he initiated coming out. I mean, I have to say, I would never have dreamed of asking him to come from California. And he really wanted to be here for our last tour, and which was really fantastic.
Yeah.
So he definitely went beyond supporting the idea of it.
Yeah. Well, what's been the response been there? I mean, have you gotten a lot of blind or poor-sighted people that have really enjoyed it? Or, I mean, what are the responses that you get from it?
Well, one thing that occurs to me is, you know, we had visits, so out of the, prior to the last tour, we had had three other public tours and a number of private tours, and we had some folks who wanted to be repeat visitors and come back, especially having experienced the piece once, either with myself there giving an introduction or even with Rob directly,
or one of our other guides.
And then when we learned that Jed was going to fly out in April for our final tour and the artist was going to be present, many people were very eager for that opportunity to talk with the artist and ask him questions, even having already been on the tour.
Yeah,
right.
So that was quite affirming to know, having experienced it once and having gone through the process of, you know, engaging with this contemporary piece that they could touch directly, mm-hmm. they really did want to come back and do it again.
Yeah.
We got a lot of good feedback, both about the piece itself. I mean, you know, there's always variation. There are people who love Egyptian sculpture, and people who love the neoclassical American, and people who love contemporary, and people who love it all, and people who don't like X, Y, or Z, you know, again, right. just like
anyone.
But by and large, people had a really good time with it. Yeah. And I think it was, it's different than a lot of the objects that we have. We have a fairly large number of objects in our collection that we can touch.
Mm-hmm.
But we do usually touch with gloves.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this is the only piece we have that is made out of this particular material. So, and it's in three parts, which is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And people really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it.
You know, what's interesting also is something that Jed pointed out to me. So Hannah was kind enough to walk Jed through the experience of guided touching of another piece in our collection.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because Jed knows his own piece very well.
Right.
And it's also of a relatively low to the ground, small scale. These are large pieces that are about like 350 pounds, 150 pounds, 100 pounds. And, you know, it's a really dense object,
mm-hmm.
but it's about the size of, say, an end table or a piece mm-hmm. of furniture. And so one of our, you know, our visitors could actually touch almost all of the sides and it sits directly on the
yeah.
floor. So nothing was, and I'm using the, like, air quotes here, quote unquote, out of reach,
uh-huh.
right? But Jed raised the point when he went with Hannah to look at another sculpture in our collection, which is a sculpture by David Smith, and it's part of his Cubi series,
uh-huh.
and it's a relatively tall stainless steel sculpture that reaches higher than most people, even a tall basketball player, you know, higher than most people can reach the top of, right?
Right.
And Jed realized that in engaging with Hannah, he put on the gloves and he was touching the piece
and not using his vision.
And not using his vision.
Mm-hmm.
And so closing his eyes. And as he was trying to navigate his understanding of the piece without his eyes open, he realized suddenly there was a margin where information stopped. And
uh-huh.
that was beyond where he could possibly reach. So it's as if you were touching a tree trunk and going up and feeling the beginning branches, and then you couldn't reach any higher.
Right.
And so he realized that that part would not be knowable
uh-huh.
to him, right?
Not tactile
knowable
right.
to him.
Right.
And as an artist and as a sculptor who is so used to, one, having things, you know, knowable to him, but also that like it's placed in a room and you can approach it from 20 feet away and get a sense of how it occupies the space
mm-hmm.
And have a sense how high the ceiling is and have a sense how something is sort of filling a space.
Mm-hmm.
He realized he couldn't know that in the way that he thought he could.
Uh-huh.
But he could know other things.
He could know other things.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is the other cool part about doing
mm-hmm.
that. And he had a different experience with the material.
Yeah.
You would have.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, right. I guess it's that that sudden understanding of both the limits and then what's limitless when it's coming to experiencing a work of art that I think is really interesting about this program. And
I think like
one
that.
Of the. Yeah.
That's really
I think
cool.
One of the, yeah. Yeah. And I think that's true for all of us. I have limits and. In my understanding, even as I'm sighted,
uh-huh.
and then there are some things that are limitless, as Hannah was talking about the universal.
Mm-hmm.
But it was sort of manifest when, aside from having the touch experience with just sculpture, I was in the position, we were paired up with our guests, and then going to pay attention to other works in the gallery. And so we were doing a sort of narrativized looking. And so I'm with a visitor who's not sighted and said, okay, well, there are three options in the space. And one is, you know, made of these materials, one's of these materials, one's of these materials. Which would you be most interested in going and learning more about? And, you know, my guest decided. and we walked up to that piece, and I began, to the best of my abilities, describing this piece, you know, its scale.
The piece that couldn't be touched.
Right, it couldn't be touched. So its scale, its texture, it was a piece of canvas that was cut in an ovular shape and was pinned to the wall in an irregular fold, so it was draping, and, you know, I was describing, you know, about its height off of the ground. I was describing how there was a relationship between, you know, leather cords and the sides of these folds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the visitor that I was with was asking questions, fully engaged with this description. So in some ways, it put a lot of responsibility in being the filter of information.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was you know, as if different neurons are firing in my brain to look at the piece in a way it wouldn't be otherwise.
Yeah. I think that's so cool. I think that's so great. Because you mentioned, and I wouldn't have even thought of this, that it would be, that it's really good to view art collectively, like a blind person and a seeing person. I think that's an awesome idea.
Well, and this is what Hannah's talking about, that we need more spaces where sighted and either not sighted or low vision visitors can be engaging together.
Yeah.
Because I definitely think it's mutually beneficial.
Definitely. Well, I think your place is a great place for that. You know, she needs to get some more, though.
Yeah. Are there other bigger institutions or bigger programs that you really respect, Hannah?
Yeah, there are some. The Metropolitan Museum, MoMA, both have pretty extensive programs for people who are blind. Probably those two in ours. The ones that have been around the longest, so maybe has, you know, had quite a bit of time to develop. But more museums are doing this in different ways. You know, every museum is different. I mean, my philosophy is that what we're doing is aiming for equity, so we shouldn't limit anything. You know, we really should go the whole way. If we have special exhibitions, then everyone should have access to that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And some museums make choices, you know, well, they'll have a touch tour or they'll have descriptive tours or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But both MoMA and the Met, you know, they do a number of different things. The Metropolitan Museum also has done, over the last couple of years, a fair amount of drawing. The people who are blind or low vision.
Like the blind people will be drawing?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
And, but there are definitely other museums. I'm sorry, I feel like I'm drawing a blank now. But there are, Art Institute of Chicago. They do have some things there. Thinking art museums. I'm trying to think what I know. The Whitney has done some things. Some of the Smithsonian museums. You know, it's definitely growing more.
Uh-huh.
There's more to it in the last period of time. I would say I've been here for 15 years.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And I would say in the last half dozen years, there are many, many more museums that are taking it on. And there are a lot of smaller museums that have done some really incredible things.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes because they see the need, they recognize a desire there from visitors,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, are responding to that. Everyone should do it.
Yeah, I agree.
Why not?
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much, guys, for talking about this with me on this episode. Do you have anything else you want to promote at your museum? Since this one's over.
Both of our eyes just lit up. So anything else to promote? I would say Hannah and I are already talking about possibilities for future collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
And it really, I think the most important thing is, at least in my mind,
I feel like the success comes out of a real intentional engagement. And so if in this case, I really felt like both having known the artist and his personality and knowing this piece, I could see the possibilities and really felt like I could imagine Hannah could see them too. And we just found such a productive fulcrum to connect on this. And, you know, when the work calls for it, and so, you know, in many cases, again, in our contemporary department, there are works across media. There are single-channel videos and photographs and paintings, but we do also have a number of sculptural works.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, that is opening up a really live experience in a way.
Yeah.
That can be quite profound. And so I think sometimes it may be thematically or based on subject matter. Other times it may be based on the media or the material that the work is produced with, or sometimes it just may be out of maybe the personality of an artist that we think would be engaged with these questions. But in any case, I feel like when there is a really substantial opportunity to dig in, it's worth it.
Yeah, definitely. So, well, this has been so great. I really appreciate you guys coming on.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having us.
Awesome. Thanks so much to Jen Mergel and Hannah Goodwin of the Boston Museum of Fine Arts for telling us about the Feeling for Form exhibition. And thank you to you for listening. I know I learned a lot. If you're in the Boston area, check out the museum. If you're interested in having us promote your product or service, if you have a comment, if you have ideas for future podcasts, or would like to be on the show yourself, please contact me at arttalkwithbrooke@gmail.com. That's all one word and Brooke with an E. Thanks for listening.
Let's Talk Art with Brooke is a Hotspur Enterprises media production.